To ring in the new year, we are presenting a special interview with the show's head writer and producer, Bree Harvey. This week marks her 70th episode of KB Cabaret. Today, we'll find out the motivation behind her characters and inspiration for the development of the hour-long program, along with special presentations of our favorite stories and songs she never knew she could write. I'm Charles Berman, your host. Come with me to hear the insights of KB Cabaret.
Welcome to our town. Welcome to Parlor City, where our friends come out to play. When neighbors don't leave, they stay and chat a while. Welcome to our town, to KB Cabaret.
This week, we have a special interview with the producer and head writer of KB Cabaret, Bree Harvey, with highlights and maybe even surprises from her show.
Welcome to our town, to KB Cabaret.
So my goodness, Bree, it has been over a year this show has been on the air.
Well, a year, 3 months, and 21 days, approximately, give or take 30 seconds.
Over 200,000 listeners, has been picked up by podcast stations, and is about to be syndicated. Did you ever think the show would be so popular?
Honestly, my motivations were not necessarily to become popular, but just do what I love to do. Although I'm glad that so many people follow the show, I suppose this underlines the fact that one should always follow what they are born to do and what is part of their identity.
Being a writer of comedy?
Yes, but, well, truly, I write observations, Charles. Sometimes I don't wish to be funny.
So the show's not strictly comedy and song?
Oh, no. That never was my intention. I wanted to create an old-fashioned variety show with advice, stories, some poetry, recipes, and, well, yeah, comedy and songs included.
Now, not many people know you wrote the theme song for this show and all of the character jingles.
Well, that's right, most of the character jingles. Since my whole premise of the show is to be original, I need to have original songs. I wanted to create an old-fashioned theme song. KB Cabaret is set in Parlor City, my hometown, which can be any town USA, really. And Welcome to Parlor City just popped into my head, the first song I had ever written.
Is that right?
Yep. Writing the theme song and the character jingles truly was a fluke. And it opened up floodgates to an inherited trait somewhere that I never knew existed.
Well, you've certainly created a lot of music for the show. Did you have a musical background?
I learned how to play the piano when I was 5, but that's not really my background. I guess genetics is my background. My grandmother was a concert pianist. My grandfather had an orchestra. He wrote many songs. And we have many people who write theater and plays and music. So we have a lot of composers in our family and writers.
Now, you have a lot of recurring characters and theme songs for a lot of them.
That's right. The only recurring character that doesn't have a song, which I had written, is Granny Ada. I used Edvard Grieg's Morning Song for her.
Granny Ada, the no-nonsense advice columnist.
Yes, played by the very talented Judy McMahon.
What motivated you to create the character of Granny Ada?
Well, I always read the daily advice column out loud for my husband. So I knew I wanted to start off the show that way.
Huh. And she was more, shall we say, dogmatist at the beginning.
You noticed? Yes. I made her less so as the time went on. However, the first episode of Granny Ada was inspired by a very close relative of mine and my discussion about an article she read about cayenne pepper and its power to increase the reproductive abilities of a man.
Really? A relative's reaction to cayenne pepper inspired you to create Granny Ada?
I suppose it was her reaction that inspired me to write the way I wrote her character. She was animately upset about the whole situation.
That's funny.
Well, many things in my life have a quirky side.
Shall we listen to the first episode of Granny Ada?
Absolutely.
Mornings are a special time for me. My rituals are simple. A good cup of coffee, soft classical music, and a little daily feature in our local newspaper called Advice with Granny Ada.
And now KB Cabaret presents Advice with Granny Etta, Parlor City's cherished advice columnist.
Dear Granny Etta, my husband and I have been married for 2 years. We're both in our mid-20s. He's the man of my dreams, a good provider, has a great personality, and tries to be romantic in every way. We would like to have a child, but in the last year I cannot seem to raise his flagpole, if you know what I mean. We've gone to specialists, been tested, and it seems he has a low testosterone level. I've read that adding cayenne or chili peppers to a man's diet will increase hormone levels and raise his chances to perform. We believe in natural remedies first before trying anything else. What do you think? Signed, Down and Out.
Dear Down, how delightful. Having a child is a blessed event. Those rose-colored cheeks, those little hands, the innocence of youth. I love all of my 15 legitimate white American grandbabies. Funny how real men in my day did not have any problem standing up to their responsibilities. In my day, when we wanted children, boom, there they were. No questions asked, no rubber raincoats, no uppers, downers, voodoo, or have an apple. Hot peppers, my dear, really? I assume you read this in some Mexican magazine or Cajun ad trying to push their produce. Let me tell you, dear, the only spice you need in the bedroom is you. Start by prettying up. My assumption is that you're not trying hard enough. Perhaps take a bath, shave your legs, put on a little makeup. Try losing some weight, maybe. After all, not taking care of Miss Puss is probably the reason you married so late in life. Spice yourself up, not the inner libido of your man. That is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. He probably has no testosterone problem when it comes to a secretary's, dear. If you have the urge to use chili peppers in the bedroom, why don't you put it on your loofah sponge, dear, and lather up? Then maybe you'll see how foolish, nonsensical, ludicrous, and dim-witted your idea is. Thank you for writing, honey. Have a nice day. Granny Etta.
And thank you, Granny Etta.
Now, we can't have Granny Etta without the character Beulah Deschamps, Parlor City's chef extraordinaire, following her right after.
That's right.
Judy McMahon plays Beulah Deschamps as well, doesn't she?
Yes, she does.
So what inspired you to write this character?
Well, Beulah is loosely based on the old Galloping Gourmet character. I don't know if you remember him. He drank quite a bit of wine during his cooking segments.
Is that a fact?
Yes. And if you spell Beulah's last name, Deschamps, backward, you get the word...
smashed.
Exactly. And first, she did drink a lot because, well, she had a terrible marriage and she had many problems with that marriage. And then she found out her husband, Leon, was cheating on her.
She divorces him eventually at some point.
Yes, yes, she does. And then she had some other family issues to deal with.
And she's traveling in Europe now.
Exactly, and she's trying to find herself.
And she even went on tour with a jazz group.
Yes, that's right. Soon, however, she is coming home. There will be quite a change in Beulah's life.
It's a regular soap opera.
With over 70 kitchen-tested recipes.
That's right. You have recipes on your show.
Yes. There are several vegan options for those recipes as well. And currently, you can only get them through this KB Cabaret app, which... I'm sorry, but I'm shamelessly promoting.
Do you have a link to the app?
Yes. As a matter of fact, lucky you asked. You can find them on our website.
KBCabaret.com?
Yes. Just make sure you spell cabaret with a K. That's KBKABARET.com.
So let's listen to the first time Beulah Deschamps makes an appearance on your show.
Home, sweetie.
We're on air, Beulah. Come on over. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for my neighbor and Parlor City's best-kept culinary secret, Beulah Deschamps.
Oh, that's so sweet of you, honey. You're embarrassing me.
I didn't mean to. But you have to admit you make the best casseroles and cakes in town. Why, your layered lamb and potatoes were out of this world, and your baked Alaska was off the charts. I can still taste them in my dreams. One of these days, Beulah, I like those recipes.
Well, I love you for saying that, honey. But some recipes are meant to be kept as family secrets, handed down from generation to generation in the Deschamps family. But I did come over to show your guests how to make something that has been a favorite with my husband Leon when he's off on the road and at home.
Oh, my taste buds are tingling. What do you propose?
My recipe for Tennessee bourbon pecan pie.
Oh, Beulah, that sounds marvelous.
Now, I had your people bring in all the makings for the pie, and I thought maybe you could help me.
Oh, I'd love to.
Here's your apron, sweetie. Wash your hands, and I'll get out the starter.
The starter?
Mmm. The best Tennessee bourbon money can buy this side of the city.
Oh, well,
I got two shots. Two shot glasses. One for me and one for you.
I can't drink bourbon during the show, Beulah.
Well, never you mind then. Well, here's to you. Smooth. That'll do nicely, yes, indeedy. Now we can get started. We'll take 1/4 cup of pecans, a good handful, and place them in a pot of nice melted butter. And a pinch of salt. We'll put those lovelies on low heat until they brown for about 2 minutes. Beautiful! And you can smell the nutty aroma and the savory melted butter. A little more of this beautiful elixir to get this chef in the mood. Now, let's get the old dough paddle out for the scrumptious, crusty crust. This pie requires a buttermilk crust, giving the dough that distinct pecan flavor for our pecan tea pie.
Beulah, don't you think that maybe you should not drink... Beulah.
That is so smooth. Dearie pie, sweetie, the pecans are roasted. Set it aside to cool. Now, where were we?
The crust?
Oh, yes. Oh, silly me. I would take 1 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, 2 lovely teaspoons of sugar, and drop it right here in this little old mixing bowl. Right there, yes. Now add 1/4 cup of cold butter. And 1/4 shortening and pulse until they resemble crumbly crumblers. You know what they say about a cold hand and a warm heart for crusts, dear. Let me just warm up my heart here.
Beulah, maybe you should slow down a bit with the bourbon.
Slow down, honey, sweetie pie. Cold hands, warm heart. Oh, and add 3 to 4 tablespoons of buttermilk.
I'm sorry?
Buttermilk in the crust until it forms a ball of fun dough, and then plastity plastic to refrigerate. A toast to the crust. Oh, so smooth.
Beulah.
Oh, yes, dear, I know. You're just watching the filling. Who's my Tennessee friend here? Let's mixy-mix 1/4 cup of this sweetness in this nice bowly bowl here. 1/4 cup for your bowly bowl and 1/4 cup for me. Oh, so smooth.
Beulah, oh my gosh, she's passed out. Guys, help me get her off the set. Well, I'd like to thank Beulah Deschamps for leaving us on a high note. And to be fair, we will have all our recipes on our website on kbcabaret.com. That's kbkabaret.com.
many people write for your show?
I have two writers, aside from myself, writing for the show. The very talented John Carey and John Montgomery.
Monty and Carey.
Yes, they are our one-liner guys. Both my Johns have written several episodes for the floral-shirted duo.
Let's hear one Monty and Carey episode called Monty and Carey at the Class Reunion.
Hey, Monty, look at us. We're at our high school reunion.
Yeah, Carey. Seems like we were in high school a lot longer than 10 years ago.
I think it might be 15.
I can't wait to see all those girls we went out with back then.
Yeah, all two of them. One apiece.
That sure was a great night when we went out on that double date.
Until we ran out of gas and got that flat tire. We didn't know what to do.
And those football players came along to help us, and our dates got in their car, and they all took off together.
Ha ha! Isn't it great reliving these old memories?
Yeah, that's what reunions are all about.
Monty, look, it's them, June and Julie.
Wow, you think they'll remember us?
Nobody ever forgets Monty and Carey. Hey, girls, June and Julie, remember us?
Oh, my gosh, it's Monty and Carey. How could anyone forget you two? You guys still hanging out together?
Nice matching flowered shirts, guys. Have you been saving them in the closet since high school?
Hey, you remember our matching flowered shirts after 20 years?
I think it might be 25.
Hey, girls, are you two, still single?
Yes, we're still single. Or shall I say single again?
What about you guys? Anyone capture your hearts yet?
Not since our double date in high school.
Double date? Are you sure? Julie, do you remember going out on a double date with these guys?
No, I'm pretty sure I would have remembered that.
Don't you remember running out of gas and our flat tire?
Yeah, and those two football players who came along to help and you took off with them?
Oh, that was you guys we ditched?
We're really sorry, guys. We were just cold.
And sick.
And tired.
Well, we should let bygones be bygones after 30 years.
I think it might be 35.
Well, bye, guys. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you in another 40 years.
I think it might be 45.
Isn't that great, Carey? They want to see us again.
Yeah, Monty. These matching flowered shirts sure do turn the ladies on, don't they?
Uh-oh, Carey. Look over there. Isn't that Miss McCafferty?
Yikes, that's her. She doesn't look a bit different either. We better get out of here, Monty. If she sees us, she'll whack us with a yardstick she always carries around.
Monty and Carey. I'd recognize those matching flowered shirts anywhere. Get over here, you two worthless weasels.
We're sorry, Miss McCafferty. We didn't mean to upset you again after 50 years.
I think it might be 55.
You two never were any good at math, or anything else for that matter.
We're sorry, Miss McCafferty. You're not going to whack us with that yardstick again, are you?
You're still a couple of groveling brown noses, aren't you? What are you doing with yourselves these days?
Oh, we hang around together, drink beer, and look at women all day.
I could have predicted that.
Yeah, we sure lived up to our potential, didn't we?
You boys make me wonder why I spent 60 years of my life teaching.
I think that might be 65.
That's enough. You'd better get out of here before I get that yardstick out and beat you like rented mules.
Okay, we're leaving. Goodbye, Miss McCafferty. Hope you maintain your good looks and personality.
What a couple of boot-licking butt-kissers.
Hey, Monty, we sure are having a great time here at the reunion, aren't we?
Yeah, Carey. It's nice to know we can still go out and enjoy ourselves after 70 years, huh?
I think it might be 75.
I think we all know sweet, lovable doofuses like the characters of Monty and Carey. We also have the great fortune to have guest writers, like yourself and Bill Murray, and even some from our listening audience.
Anyone stand out in particular?
Well, two stand out in particular. The one you and Pete Bowers wrote called The Psychic Drive-Thru, and the skit that Bill Murray wrote called Confessions.
Shall we play them?
Oh, yes, please.
Do you know why I called you in here?
Yeah.
You need to stop
using my psychic powers while working the drive-thru, I know.
Wait, how do you...
Oh!
It doesn't make sense not to. I mean, it saves time, and nobody can hear each other through that crappo speaker.
Well, bad speaker or not, I've been getting...
I know. Complaints about me all week. They're all dumb. Everyone's dumb.
Dumb? The guy said he asked for the big beef bueno, and you refused to give him anything but the chicken boat ultimate.
He's a liar. That's not what he wanted.
No, it's what he ordered. It's not what he wanted.
Don't we want to give people what they want?
If we did, would we really be a fast food joint?
That would probably be up to corporate.
Al, have you ever heard that the customer is always right?
You don't believe that.
Yes, I... Okay, it doesn't matter if I believe it.
That's the biggest crock I've ever heard. Always right. The last person who came through thought you were attractive.
Seriously? Who?
Oh, come on. Even you've got to admit that can't be right.
I'm asking you who?
The 83-year-old woman in the wheelchair whose husband just died of carbon monoxide poisoning while he was trying to fix her car. I mean, you saw her.
Ick.
Oh, my God. You're thinking about her right now.
No, I'm not.
You are! You're thinking about her naked 83-year-old body. Oh, God, that's revolting.
This is why people are complaining, Al. Listen,
I rarely talk about naked 83-year-old bodies with the customers.
Just because you can tell what people are thinking does not mean you should be talking about what people are thinking. This one guy who was taking out his kid's whole Little League team after the game, did you have to tell him you knew he was wearing ladies' underwear?
I was recommending deals. Clothing Beetle was having a 20% off sale.
I don't even want to know how you knew that.
Hello, I'm psychic.
Look, I walked up behind you today and I heard you giving a couple directions to another restaurant. Do you realize how bad for business that is? People will think we don't even believe in our own product. How could you use your psychic whatever for finding ways to lose us business like that?
They asked me. They were lost. Not everything is psychic. Jeez.
Oh, well, that's all right. No, it isn't. You don't give people directions to the competition. You don't embarrass customers. And you don't give them things other than they ask for. You just give them the food and that's it. You got it?
I tried that already.
Al, you have to wait for them to order.
This is so inefficient.
And so creepy.
What? What's creepy? They're here for food.
There are a few possible reactions when you just tell them the price before they order, Al. There's scared, confused, angry, and possibly hungry.
Well, they'd have to be to eat here.
What did you say?
I said I wish that they would be of good cheer.
No, you didn't. I know what you said.
I know. Stop asking me to say it again.
Al!
No, she isn't, Bill. And I'm insulted that you would even suggest that.
Wait for me to say things before you answer.
Jeez, what a waste of time.
No, it's basic politeness.
Are you finished?
Do you really have to ask?
Nope.
All right, Al. You have got a hell of a lot to live down here. Hey, wait, come back here. Where are you going?
I know you're going to fire me.
Well, that was easier than I thought it would be.
And by the way, even the non-psychic people all know it's a toupee.
Crap.
Please begin.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 1 year since my last confession, and these are my sins. Well, Father, I don't know how to say this.
Don't worry. God understands and forgives us all. There's nothing you could say that would shock me.
Well, Father, that puts me at ease.
Now go ahead, my son.
Well, Father, I've had sex outside of marriage.
How many times have you done this, my son?
347 times in the past year.
My goodness. 347 times with one woman in 1 year?
Oh, no, Father. Many different women. A few times with each.
Well, you must travel far and wide to find that many sinful women. Does your job take you all over the country?
Oh, no, Father. I work and live in the village. I've never left the village.
Well, I see you're pulling my leg. There are no more than 100 women in this entire village. So there's no way your story could have happened. But you have added being a sinful liar to your sins.
I swear it's all true.
Of course it is not true. I was saying to my housekeeper just the other day how the people today have no regard for the truth.
Oh, Mrs. O'Reilly, Lovely woman. Large breast. Likes a good pat on the bottom.
Are you saying that my housekeeper has been up to no good with the likes of you?
Well, just 3 times at the most.
Good Lord, man, she's a member of the church choir.
Ah, the choir. Mrs. Shields, choir director. And then Maggie, Angela, Colleen, Rose, Sheila, Peg. Oh, and so many more. All spectacular women in their own unique ways.
The whole choir. My choir.
Afraid so, Father.
No, I refuse to believe any of this. Besides, it is mathematically impossible for you to have done this. As I said, there cannot be more than 100 women in this village.
I see your point, Father, but apparently I'm very good at this particular sin, and I can only assume it was word of mouth.
Word of mouth? I still refuse to believe it because it physically is impossible for you to have done this. It would require you to have done the act more than 3 times a day over the course of a year. So there.
Not trying to be snotty here, Father, but you stick to your area of expertise and I'll stick to mine. As I said, I'm very good at this particular sin, so it's not more than 3 times a day every day, just some days. And, I mean, just do the math, 100 into 365.
Well, all I can say is I'm glad the doors of the convent are locked.
Yes, except Tuesday and Thursday afternoons between 3 and 6.
My God, man, I am gobsmacked. It means I am the shepherd of the village of Loose Women. If what you say is true, then you have not only committed the grave sin of sex outside of marriage. Many of the women you speak of are married. That means you and they are nothing but dirty adulterers.
Let's not pile on here, Father.
Pile on? All right, that's quite enough. 1,000 Hail Marys and 1,000 Our Fathers. Now get out of here before you implicate my dear mother.
Well, that's another reason I came here today, my son.
Now, you've become quite a songwriter since the creation of the show.
Yes, that's right. I now have an agent in Nashville and get requests for songs.
There is one you wrote for a teenage singer in Nashville.
Yes. It's called I Dream About You. I got a call asking for a Debbie Gibson-like pop song about teenage love, and I did a lot of research of what Debbie Gibson even sounds like because I had to channel myself 40 years back. And I came up with I Dream About You.
Let's listen to that now.
Thank you.
We have to mention one of my favorite series in the show, Clueless Barry.
What can I say about Clueless Barry? He is one of those poor guys who does not get why he has a problem with women.
Is this based on anyone you know?
I'll never tell.
Well, we're going to listen to the first episode of Clueless Barry. Anything to set this up?
Well, let's just say avoid texting.
Clueless Barry's first episode, Trying to Understand Women. KB Cabaret presents the ongoing saga of Clueless Barry.
Hello?
Busy?
Well, my wife and I are about to go
out. I just need advice.
You need advice at 5:45? I mean, 15 minutes before dinner?
Why? Would it have been better if I called at 5:35?
No, you don't understand. Oh, never mind. What did you want?
I just got a text.
A text?
Yeah, a text. From my girlfriend, Denise.
Denise?
Yeah, Denise.
I never heard of her.
Yeah, you have. The redhead we met a week ago at the beer cellar.
Oh, she's your girlfriend?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you take her out?
Well, technically, our first date was at the bar.
You only met her at the bar because you spilt your Coors Light on her.
Yeah, but she gave me her number.
That's because she wants you to pay her dry cleaning bill.
No, she gave me her number because she liked me.
Oh, she does?
I felt it. She had that I like you look.
You know, I thought it looked more like you moron, you ruined my dress kind of look.
Are you going to help me or what?
Well, whatever. So she sent you a text. What does it say?
Well, that's the whole point. I don't get it.
You don't get what?
The text she sent me. Are you listening?
So, what does it say?
Back off. I need my space. What is that supposed to mean?
Well, it means back off. She needs her space.
I don't get it.
What did you do before she sent you the text?
Nothing.
Are you sure?
Well, I called her.
And?
I asked about the car.
What car?
The car in her driveway.
Oh. Wait. She invited you over.
What are you talking about?
Well, you just said you went to her house.
Yeah, so?
So she invited you over, right?
No, she didn't invite me over.
But you just happened to go to her house?
Well, she lives in the neighborhood.
Whose neighborhood? Barry, did she even give you her address?
I Google searched it.
You Google searched it. That's stalking, Barry.
No, it's not. She gave me her phone number.
Her phone number, not her street address.
You're just splitting hairs, Davis.
Fine. I can't even remember what we were talking about.
The car in her driveway.
Oh, yeah. So why did you call her about the car?
It wasn't hers.
And how do you know what car she's been driving?
Well, after I spilled the beer, I followed her to her car, apologizing.
You followed her?
Yeah, to her car. A red 2008 Forester.
Oh, you know, those are reliable cars.
Oh, yeah, they have turbocharged engines.
And they're dog-friendly.
I know, right? But when I went by her house, by accident, the other day, you know what was there instead of a Forester?
I'll bite. What?
A brand new black Jeep Cherokee.
Whoa, sweet. Did it have a dual sunroof and Napa Frost beige leather seats?
Yeah. And it had park assist with rear backup camera and blind spot monitoring.
No way. That's so crazy. Wait. What am I saying? Dude, you're totally stalking her.
Would a stalker call after he accidentally passes by her house and innocently ask about the black Cherokee in her driveway?
No. But a stupid stalker guy like you would.
I just wanted to know who the guy was.
What guy?
The guy she's shagging? The guy whose black Jeep was parked in her driveway? Are you even listening?
What, seriously?
That's what she said.
You're just lucky she didn't call the cops.
I did apologize to her after she explained a few things to me.
I can only guess.
No, you got it wrong. She's so cute when she yells and curses. So I guess that's why I'm confused.
You lost me.
The text, man. The text. Back off. What does that mean?
It means I have to go out for dinner before my wife kills me. You are hopeless.
Whatever, man. Go to your wife. Women, I don't get them.
You never will, buddy. You never will.
You think I should text her back and ask?
Will Barry really text Denise? Will Barry text Davis to get him out of jail? Will Davis's wife kill her husband for continuously speaking with Barry? Tune in next time for the saga of Clueless Barry.
Now, there's another sketch that keeps coming up that seems to be recordings from the 911 number. Now, are those real recordings or are those sketches that you've written?
Oh, no. Kate Murray usually plays the operator, but we have several other people who play it as well. And it's John Kerry's creation, the 911. First of all, let me just say that 911 is extremely necessary. There are people who call for no reason whatsoever, and that's what John taps in on.
What's your favorite 911 call that we've heard?
There is one very funny one that comes to mind is a woman who is enamored by one of the 911 EMTs, or the EMT who came out, and she wants to find his number, and she calls 911 for that, and that was just... very funny. Probably could be an episode out of my life before I met my husband.
Well, don't do this in real life, but let's listen to a recording from 911.
What's your emergency?
I need to speak with your EMT.
I'm sorry, but there are no EMTs here. What's your emergency?
No emergency. I just need to speak with your EMT.
I just told you, ma'am, there are no EMTs here. Do you have an emergency?
Well, I just told you that I don't. All I want to do is speak with the EMT that came to my house earlier today.
Ma'am, this is an emergency call center, staffed only with qualified medical operators. If you have no emergency, then you need to hang up immediately.
Okay, but when he gets back, tell him to call me. Should I leave you my number, or does it just pop up on your screen?
No, ma'am. On all accounts, you need to hang up now, or I will dispatch the police.
Do you know where he's going next? Maybe I can meet him there. Hang on. Let me grab a pen.
That's it. I'm dispatching an officer to your location. Please remain where you are.
But what about the EMT? Where do you keep them?
We don't keep them anywhere, ma'am. They belong to various emergency squads throughout the surrounding communities, and we dispatch them as necessary.
Oh.
You sound disappointed.
I am.
Why? What makes you think we have EMTs here?
Well, first off, I live with my mother, and she's getting up there in years. Well, earlier today, she took a nasty little fall in the garden. I told her I was going to get the weeds, but she wouldn't listen. She's like that, you know. Has to be done right this minute. And it's not like she didn't know where the edge of the fountain was, because she's the one who had it put in. So she's bending over, something the doctor told her she shouldn't do, and starts pulling the weeds. And for some reason, stops paying attention, backs into the wall, and plop, over she went. Probably serves her right, but we weren't sure if she had broken anything, so just to be safe, we called 911. You guys.
Uh-huh.
And you sent over the EMT.
Uh-huh.
A really cute EMT.
Uh-huh.
He was so adorable and handsome, and he got my mom on her feet in no time. You know, I think we had a few moments while he was here. But he left before I had a chance to get his phone number, and I just thought...
that you would call us to get it?
So you'll do it?
No.
Oh, come on.
That's not how it works.
Well, how does it work?
Oh, for God's sake.
Wait a minute. There's someone at the door.
Ma'am?
I think it's a police officer.
Ma'am, as soon as the officer...
Ooh, he's cute.
Ma'am?
Way cuter than that EMT.
Ma'am.
I'm not making the same mistake twice. Well, hello, handsome. Come in.
Now, we need to talk about the dysfunctionals.
Okay.
Who did you base these unusual characters on?
You really want to know?
I do. I'm sure the audience would like to know, too.
Well, they are based on my family and actual stories in my life.
Really? You actually experienced these events in the dysfunctionals?
Why do you think I'm a writer? It's either writing about my crazy surroundings or ending up with many, many drugs.
Let's play the very first episode of the dysfunctionals, The Dinner.
Let's go. We don't have all night.
Coming, dear.
It's 8:30. Your loudmouthed daughter just called and said we're late.
Did you see my purse, Stanley? The one with the big brown pocket on the front?
The one on your arm?
I'll turn on the alarm when we leave. Now, where's my purse?
Oh, for God's sake, it's on your arm, your arm.
Oh, silly of me.
Do you have everything now, Ruth?
I think so. Don't rush me.
I'm not rushing you. You've been getting ready since 4:30.
I invited them for 6 o'clock. A little late, maybe, but almost 3 hours.
They're your parents, hon. Don't act so surprised.
This is so typical.
Mom, don't you think you had enough?
I'm not drinking, Elizabeth. I'm fortifying my sanity.
I think I hear them pulling up. Be nice.
Okay, but don't hold me to it.
Why do we invite them at all?
It's what our family does. Suffer.
I heard that.
Ruth, Stanley, come on in.
Well, let's get this over with. What stinks?
Nice to see you too, Stanley.
Hello, dear. Where's my baby granddaughter?
Hello, Grandma.
Come give your grandma a kiss. How did you get so tall? How did she get so tall?
Lucky, I guess.
This generation is getting taller and taller from all the crap they eat.
Nice.
Where's Ruth?
Be right out.
Shout? I'm not shouting. I'm only asking. She can be so rude sometimes.
You're the loud one. Don't talk to your mother that way.
What are you talking about? What did I do?
She's got such a big mouth.
Never mind. Just come out here.
Hi, Mom. Dad. Nice you could make it so quickly.
Hi, dear. You look lovely.
What did you do to your hair?
Nothing, really. It's the same as always.
Did you color it differently?
No.
Whatever you did, it looks god-awful. You sure know how to ruin your look.
Was that comment necessary?
I'm old enough to say what I think. Your hair looks like...
Would anybody like a drink?
No, dear. But isn't it a little cold in here?
Well, let me turn up the heat.
Well, this is nice. Hope you like roast beef. That's what we're having.
Whatever you make, dear, is fine. I won't eat much, anyway.
Yeah, we had something before we came.
You ate before you came here for dinner?
It was 8 o'clock. We were getting hungry.
Are you kidding me?
Honey.
Mom, fine. Let's just sit at the table. Howard, pour me something. Anything.
This is nice.
Here you are.
Let's get this over with.
Here's your drink.
What's this?
Chicken soup with noodles.
Tastes like the can it came in.
It's from scratch.
Do you remember the delicious soups I used to make, Stanley? I made sure all the ingredients were fresh.
Well, this tastes like crap. I'm glad I'm not hungry. What else you got?
There's spinach salad with feta, walnuts, and cranberry.
Just bring the meat.
Fine.
We just saw a movie about Alan Turing, the guy who pioneered the internet, called The Imitation Game. Really fascinating stuff.
Turing. Sounds Hungarian.
No, he was British.
Are you sure?
He was British.
Well, he could have been Hungarian.
Not everyone is Hungarian, Grandma.
Anyone who is anyone is Hungarian, dear.
Well, the irony of his life was that after all he did for the world, he was condemned for being gay.
Yeah, it was awful.
He was an idiot.
For what?
For prancing around showing off he was gay.
That's the dumbest thing I've heard you say.
Look, I've got nothing against gay people. Let them be gay privately, but when you prance around, la-di-da-da-da, look at me, then that's when you start showing off.
This is delicious beef, dear. Too bad I'm not so hungry.
Dry as toast. Good thing I ate.
Honey, where are you going?
Upstairs. I'll be down tomorrow.
Typical. Rude always, running away from the truth.
No, I just need to soak my head.
You're going to bed?
That's right, Mother.
Well, that's the last time we come to dinner at your house.
Promises, promises.
I told you, your daughter has a big mouth.
You really went through that?
Oh, yes. Repeatedly.
I have a whole new respect for you.
Gee, thanks, Charles.
Okay, now there's something I've noticed in your show. Given the current elections and all, you really don't have a lot of politics in your show.
I try not to. The show really is not a platform for any agenda. It's merely observations.
Then tell me why you wrote the song, Hear Me Sigh.
Oh, well, that song's lyrics have to do with more social intolerance and tolerance.
Not political?
No. I find many people use fear as a tool for control. Fear is always lurking behind the unknown, and, well, that's why I'm addressing this in my song, Hear Me Sigh.
All right, let's listen to Hear Me Sigh.
We have our fears, we cry our tears, we have spent years yelling our jeers to the unknown. We groan and moan, slinging our mud, spilling our blood. Hear me sigh.
Well, this has been a pleasure hearing a little insight and behind-the-scenes info into the creation of KB Cabaret. Is there anything looming in the near future?
Well, aside from being picked up on different markets, I am working on producing a new show.
Really? What type of show?
Stories of life, coming to life through conversation.
Do you have a title for it yet?
Well, the working title is Lend Us Your Ear.
That is something to look forward to in the new year.
Yes, it is. I am looking forward to working with many talented writers in our area.
Me too.
Let me just add how grateful I am to you, Charles, for your hard work and dedication to the show, and to all of my wonderful writers, actors John Carey and John Montgomery, Bill Murray, my great actors Judy McMahon, Kate Murray, Bonnie DeForest, Lisa Dutcher, Dawn Gould, Molly Murray, David Merrill, David Adams, Joe Bardalis, and your assistant sound engineer Valentine Monferriga, my music engineer David Rice, and all the amazing writers and talented musicians I have worked on my show. And I couldn't do this if it wasn't for you, amazing listening audience. I love you and thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks again, Bree.
I would like to request you play one more song, Charles.
Certainly. It's your show.
Well, true. But really, I just want people to know that I didn't dream for myself for a long time, and I lived through my parents' dream about me.
What do you mean?
As a child, I acted, I sang, and I wrote. And I never really liked to do anything else. And I certainly respect people who love math and sciences, but those were never, well, those never came naturally to me. Later on, I just lived my parents' dream to become anything but an artist. In their eyes, art is not a career, just a nice hobby. I was told to become a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a wife, a mother, anything but an actress or a writer. So slowly I forced voicing my dreams out loud. Their dreams overtook mine. And it took 5 decades to realize my dreams are just as important. I want my listening audience to realize the value of listening to your gut. Intuitively, we all know who we are and who we are meant to be. We just forget to listen because others project their dreams onto us. So that's why I wrote and why I would like you to play this song now. It's called You Dreamed For Me.
This is Charles Berman signing off with the song You Dreamed For Me. Until next time, we'll see you again on the radio.
My world was yours, your world not mine. You had a dream for me, nothing that I could see. You dreamed for me what I should be. I couldn't be the one to feel those dreams. Did I fail you, or did you fail me? I am strong and I need to be who I am. Listen to me and see me for me. Your dreams won't bind me in chains again. Just believe in them. Embrace our lives, just live to be. Listen and hear our voices clear. Your dreams are yours, I know what you feel. To be. Listen and hear.